Welcome to the ProPublica podcast. I'm Charlie Ornstein, and I cover healthcare here at ProPublica. Today, we're going to be talking about laboratory testing. It's no secret to many that lab testing has been caught in the dark ages of medicine, where you have to go to your doctor in order to get a prescription for a lab test, and then your doctor gets the results of the lab test. If you're lucky, he'll share it with you, and then you'll be back to going to your doctor again if you need a follow-up. A company called Theranos aimed to change that. Founded in 2003 by Elizabeth Holmes, a 19-year-old dropout of Stanford University, this company aimed to really shake up laboratory testing. It received fawning coverage from many mainstream media outlets, including the New York Times. But John Carreyrou, a reporter at the Wall Street Journal, took a more critical look at Theranos and found that behind this glossy surface, there were a lot of questions about both its effectiveness and the science that underlied its main products. John is joining us here on the podcast. John, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So how did you decide to take a look at Theranos?
Well, I had read Ken Auletta's profile of Elizabeth Holmes in The New Yorker, and which I think came out in December of 2014, and found it interesting. There were some brief critical sections in there that raised questions for me, but I didn't think all that much more of it. And then as the calendar year turned to 2015, a couple weeks later, mid-2015, I got a tip from someone, not a primary source who had any primary information, but someone who was relaying to me some, you know, third-hand information that things might not be exactly as they seemed at this company, Theranos.
So it's interesting because I think a number of reporters got tips along the way, and you were the one to pursue them. I personally heard from somebody who said that his lab results didn't match the lab results he got from a different lab. So it doesn't seem like this was a huge secret that there were questions out there.
Right. And shortly after I began looking into the company and looking into this tip, a Stanford medical school professor, I believe, put out a critical opinion piece in the Journal of the American Medical Association. And he didn't really have any information other than to say this was a company that was making very bold statements about its breakthroughs in the science of laboratory testing, saying that it could test for a number of conditions off just a drop of blood pricked from the finger, and yet it hadn't really done what you usually do in medicine, which is peer review. And he was questioning this new trend of making all these assertions about what you've invented without really proving it and having it vetted by your peers. And then there was another professor in Toronto, I believe a couple weeks or a couple months later, who came out with a critical medical journal editorial as well. So people were beginning to speak out in the scientific community as I was doing my reporting.
So let's just take a step back and put the science aside for a second. What is the hope of Theranos? What did it promise people?
So the Theranos invention, as Elizabeth Holmes announced it in magazines and at conferences, was that with a tiny drop of blood pricked from a finger with a lancet, they could run the full range of laboratory tests and get you back results on all these tests within hours and at a low cost. The latter part is true. They charge very low prices. And then when you look at the assertion that they can do the full range, you ask laboratory experts what that means, and they say it can mean anywhere from several hundred to several thousand tests. So the claim was quite bold, and this hadn't been done before, from just a drop of blood being able to run the full gamut of tests and get results back to the patients very quickly. It did sound like a real scientific breakthrough.
And for listeners who may not be aware, what does it usually take as far as blood to run that gamut of tests? Where does the blood come from and how much blood is needed?
Well, if you get tested for, say, a comprehensive metabolic panel, which is a typical panel that you might get a prescription for your doctor for, which is about a half dozen tests, you'll go to a Quest or a LabCorp or a hospital lab, and they will draw your blood with a needle that they put in your arm, and they'll draw about five tubes of blood. So quite a bit of blood is typically required to run, you know, a half dozen tests.
So Elizabeth Holmes was incredibly successful, I think, getting hundreds of millions of dollars, $400 million of investor money.
More than that.
So that valued the company at $9 billion or so?
Yeah, we went back and found some regulatory filings. and were able to calculate that they raised at least $750 million. Most of it, more than $600 million, was raised in 2014. And that last fundraising round valued the company at about $9 billion, which is a huge valuation. More or less what Quest and LabCorp are each valued at. And these companies have been around for a long time, and they have huge revenues and huge profits. And this laboratory upstart that was founded by a college dropout 10 years ago was suddenly valued at the same valuation as those two huge companies.
All right, let's stop there, because I think listeners are going to be like, why? Like, how did this unicorn get so much money? What did people see in it?
That isn't clear. What people saw in it, other than Elizabeth Holmes's pitch that she had made this scientific breakthrough, is not clear, because I've heard that, and pretty much ascertained during my reporting, that the company did not offer really any information about the science and about how the technology worked, about how its laboratory instrument worked, or about its financials. So investors who were ponying up this money were, for the most part, going in blind.
But they had a star-studded board, right?
They did. They had Henry Kissinger and George Shultz and Sam Nunn and Bill Fritz. They had a bunch of older statesmen, some retired military commanders. It was a heavy-duty board, a lot of big names in the military and former cabinet members. And so that seemed impressive at first glance.
So your first piece ran last year, and you began raising questions. What were the key questions that you found?
So the first thing was to look at whether they were or were not running the full range of laboratory tests on their proprietary technology. And after a lot of reporting and talking to former employees who were in a position to know exactly what the reality of that was, I was able to determine that of the more than 240 blood tests that they offered consumers at their blood draw centers and Walgreens stores, that at the very most, at the end of 2014, 15 of them were run on their proprietary lab instrument, which, by the way, they called the Edison, after the inventor Thomas Edison.
Pretty clever. Why does it matter, though, that who cares which instrument the tests were run on?
Well, if you're asserting that you've made a scientific breakthrough that enables you to run the full range of laboratory tests off just a drop of blood, and it turns out that you can only do 15 tests, then you're probably hyping where you are and your ability. And so then the question arises of whether you've told the truth to investors, whether you've told the truth to the public. But then there's the other issue that I discussed in my first piece, which was published in October, which is whether or not the testing for those 15 tests and then the testing for all the other tests was accurate and produced good results. And I had ex-employees telling me that they questioned the accuracy of the Edison machine, and that Theranos was also doing things like diluting small blood samples in order to create a bigger volume to run them on commercial analyzers that also created problems with accuracy. And I traveled to Arizona and talked to patients and doctors there and came up with anecdotal evidence of a test that didn't seem to square with comparative tests done at other laboratories. And so all of that made me realize that it wasn't just about potentially a company that had overhyped its science and its breakthroughs, but it might also be a matter of public health.
Right. And Theranos was really aggressive, it seems, in terms of responding to your story, both before it ran and after it ran. Elizabeth Holmes, actually speaking at a Wall Street Journal event, was critical of you. And this has continued sort of including into this year. What is their perspective?
The company has been incredibly aggressive in dealing with our reporting from the first moment that I asked an interview with Elizabeth Holmes in April after the publication of the story and until pretty much today, in addition to sending threatening letters to some of the people who've spoken to me and to trying to convince doctors who had given me accounts of patient cases and trying to convince them to change their stories. They've also systematically put out statements saying that, our reporting was inaccurate. And we, of course, have very much stood by our reporting. And I think the sequence of events that's unfolded since my first story has shown that there was very much something to what we were reporting.
So you mentioned threats. Tell us a little bit about those threats.
Well, one of my sources, one of the people who went on the record, was the widow of a top scientist at Theranos, Rochelle Gibbons, whose husband, Ian Gibbons, had worked at the company for 8 years. He was an accomplished British biochemist who, before working at Theranos, had worked at several companies in Silicon Valley and been in Silicon Valley for several decades. He came to Theranos in 2005 and was one of their top scientists. If you look at the patents that Theranos has, he's on all the early patents as a co-inventor. And what happened is Ian committed suicide in, I believe it was May of 2013. And so I talked to his widow, Rochelle, and she relayed to me that he had repeatedly told her before he died that things were not really working in the R&D department and that they weren't being successful in implementing this vision that Elizabeth had, at least for some of the tests. And so before we included it in the October 15th article, we ran it by Theranos. And what did Theranos do? Theranos sent, or had rather had one of its lawyers from Boies Schiller, David Boies' firm, send a threatening letter to Rochelle telling her essentially to stop talking. And Rochelle very much interpreted that letter as an attempt to intimidate her and to silence her.
So let's talk about that sequence of events. Maybe starting with the most significant and recent event, which is a letter that came from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services to Theranos, which said that there was an immediate jeopardy to patient health and safety out of their Norwalk, California facility.
The Newark, California lab, which is basically right across San Francisco Bay from their Palo Alto headquarters. Now, to put things in context, this is their main laboratory, their first laboratory. They originally had it inside their Palo Alto headquarters, and then they moved it to a building across the bay. Of their two labs, they have another lab in the Phoenix area. It's the first one that they created, and it's also the one that contains their proprietary devices, their Edison family of devices. It also contains commercial devices, but unlike the Arizona laboratory, this is where their purported proprietary technology is. So when you learn that the inspectors for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services went in there and discovered major deficiencies, and some of which presented immediate jeopardy for patients, then that makes you wonder about the accuracy of the testing that was done and whether the accuracy of the testing is in question for both the commercial analyzers they have in that lab, but also for the proprietary analyzers, the Edisons they have there.
Since October, what else has happened that sort of lends credence to some of the questions you've raised?
Well, the FDA also inspected Theranos' headquarters in Palo Alto and the Newark lab, I believe in late August and September, the first half of September, and came away with the judgment that these tiny little vials that Theranos uses, that it calls nanotainers to collect the blood from finger pricks, that those were medical devices that the agency should have cleared and was not given the opportunity to clear. And so it essentially put pressure on Theranos to stop using those little vials for all but one test, a test to detect herpes, which the FDA had approved in July. So once the agency essentially took away the nanotainer, Theranos had to stop drawing blood from fingers, and the whole Theranos proposition, which is a tiny drop of blood pricked from a finger, is no longer really a reality in the field. And in fact, Theranos phlebotomists at the wellness centers inside Walgreens stores are now, for the most part, almost entirely drawing blood with syringes from the vein and filling, you know, several tubes of blood like any other lab.
In addition, there have been questions, or the relationship between Walgreens and Theranos is changing, right?
That's right. We're hearing that things are getting tense between the two partners. Walgreens, after our October 15th story, made it clear that it would no longer expand the Theranos Wellness Centers to the rest of its stores. some 8,000 stores across the U.S., that it was freezing the partnership to the 40 stores in Arizona and the one in Palo Alto. And then following the CMS report 2 weeks ago about the conditions at that lab that pose immediate jeopardy to patients, Walgreens immediately shut down the wellness center inside its store in Palo Alto and told Theranos that it could no longer test any blood samples collected at the remaining wellness centers in Arizona at that Newark lab.
I think it's worth also stepping back and looking at the role that Theranos has played in a broader discussion about modernizing laboratory tests. Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos played a role in getting the Arizona legislature to change a law which allowed patients to no longer require a prescription to get a lab test, and now allowing patients to directly go to a lab and get a test. What is the role in changing sort of the way we look at lab testing and Theranos' role in that?
That was a pretty significant event. The Arizona legislature, I believe in July of last year, enacted into law a bill that said that if you were a consumer out there in Arizona, you could just go and get your blood tested and not have a prescription from a doctor. You could go and do it on your own. Now, that was controversial because there are many in the medical profession who say, including, you know, the general practitioners who would usually be the middlemen who would give you that prescription, who say, well, how is that progress? Because once the patient, you know, has those test results, more likely than not, they're going to need a doctor's opinion to decipher them and to know what those results mean. And so why not keep the doctor involved from the beginning so that, first of all, there is a logic for getting the blood tests, and then there's an expert opinion there when the test results arrive and to help you read them and interpret them.
So you don't have a crystal ball, and I don't either. And so I'm not going to ask you what's going to happen, but I do think it's worthwhile to get your perspective on what are things that people should look for as this story evolves in terms of barometers on where Theranos is headed.
Well, the first thing I think people should take a look at is whether Theranos manages to fix these major deficiencies at its Newark facility over the next few weeks or the next few months. My understanding is that the company just got another 10-day extension. It was originally given 10 days and on Friday obtained another 10 days. And it may be able to get several more extensions, but at a certain point, the clock is going to stop. And around late March, if the company hasn't resolved those issues or at least submitted to the agency, to CMS, a credible plan of correction, then the agency will make its inspection report, which I'm told is lengthy, public, and will start imposing sanctions. So that's the first thing to watch out for. The second thing is what is going to happen to this partnership between Theranos and Walgreens? Because if Walgreens were to walk away from Theranos altogether, then it's not clear that Theranos has any ability to generate any more revenues. And so then you have a private startup that's been valued at $9 billion that isn't generating any revenues. And so it would then be interesting to watch what investors who've put up money in this company have to say about that.
Well, great. Well, you've been listening to John Carreyrou, a reporter at The Wall Street Journal, talking about his investigative stories about Theranos.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the podcast, and we hope you'll tune in again next week.